Maybe just a word of introduction. I won't tell much more about you because we've been here discussing about you already. But maybe we could start right away with some views on your diamond. Mm-hmm. To explain a little bit about it, and then we could enter
well,
the discussion. Who are those people?
Yeah, okay.
Well, maybe the best thing would be that everybody presents himself very, very rapidly. Because really people are coming from different places. I could not say that those people are this group or anything else. So maybe, Salou, you can start.
How do they feel about this long wait? That's a pretty serious matter, you know.
Well, they will tell you.
I think I wasn't thinking of having this kind of introduction because you told me to get right started. Tanya, what have you been talking about while you've been sitting here? What's the mood of this group? Are they excited? Are they happy? Are they anticipating? I'm very excited about being in our day, but also we were stuck in the Shalou, the driving, and it was fine, but you people were expecting something. Here we're an hour late, and I don't know, I think we should get started, you know. But I just want to get a feeling for the mood. Why don't you just tell me what you're feeling like right now? Two words, just let's go around just two words. What you're feeling right now, so some sense of what's going on behind these eyes and all that. So maybe you should tell us, you've been calling on the phone there. Where are you right now? We are stuck with 1,000 cars around us.
No. Just a word about the place. It's the League of Optimists.
Oh my God.
So basically people who are here are often relaxed and optimist about things.
Right?
So relax and optimist. Despite the rating, no problem.
I'll test them, yeah.
All right. Anton, you were with
quick introduction. You mean like what I feel or who I am or both?
What you're feeling right now? Two words.
Still excited and curious.
Okay.
Happy and expectant.
Gee, they're optimists, all right, thank you. Yes.
Flattered to have this opportunity really.
We're not going to disappoint you, that's our commitment. Thank you.
Happy and cool.
Cool?
Cool.
Okay.
Anticipating and...
Impatient?
Anticipating.
Anticipating?
Yes. And I also feel an intimate atmosphere because okay. We can all be in contact.
I just want you to know this makes me feel a heck of a lot better to know what you're feeling. You know, you're looking very severe and so I have no idea what's going on. That helps a lot. Yes?
I'm feeling tired because I just delivered training for 3 days solid. So I'm really grateful to be receiving rather than giving.
Wow, all these that you may turn into a pessimist.
I don't think so.
How about you, Patty? Are you okay?
I'm excited and ambivalent.
She has to put up with me. That's a major crisis. Yes, sir.
Yeah. I feel there are a lot of challenges and, well, we have to cope with opportunities now and
yes.
I think that's really why I'm here, to
okay, I like
on opportunities.
Work. Good, we're going to do that. Yes, sir.
I think it's going to be a great break and a lot of fresh air in my mind after a hard week, so ready and relaxing.
Yeah, that helps with those fumes on the street.
I like what is unusual. And secondly, I'm ready to apply as quickly as possible what you will.
What's the issue to which you want to apply?
Oh, what you will teach us, or what you will deliver us. I will be happy, ready to apply it. What the group here will deliver. Ready to be quick in application.
Okay, they want something. I'm going to, the escape route is this way.
Okay.
Guardian cat outside. Thank you. I mean, those people are optimists, yes. Yes, sir.
I'm excited because I feel like things are changing and I'm optimistic about how it will change and I'm sure you'll give us insights, even more insights, to make it change in a positive way.
What do you want to change, specifically?
I think give people a higher consciousness in the way they manage more sustainable, more linked together, less selfish, less short-term, more transparency.
Here's a person who got us here. Without him, we wouldn't have gotten anywhere. He has driven Patty and me for the last few days, 1,400 kilometers. Now, after this, it's about 2,400 kilometers. So this car is about to fall apart with all of these roads here, so we owe you a lot. Special friend, and a special friend from Germany, a special friend from Bill. Yes. So what are the two of your feelings?
Well, I feel, you know, lucky to be. Thank you, Laurent, for putting this together. And really, I'm curious also to learn from and hear about you. What are the difficult or tough issues that you are dealing with within your organization, within Belgium, etc.? I'm feeling excited and see how we could really bring the diamond work in addressing those issues.
Thank you. Your receptivity makes me feel completely different. Just after hearing just those few words, I feel connected to real people. And you just tell me a little bit about your own awareness, your own consciousness. I'm probably older than everyone here, and it's a situation that's getting worse every year, and I'm not quite sure what to do about it, but it gets that way. So I have the authority of, I guess, age, and that I seem to be twice as old as many of the people I see, and then I say to myself, my God, I've lived your life twice. Something may have happened that second time around. How do you feel right now after coming in? You were almost, you almost beat us. We just got here. I can tell you we've been an hour here pontificating, but they've been sitting here twiddling their thumbs. So what are you thinking right now? What do you feel coming in here right now?
I'm feeling a bit pissed off to be so late.
But don't be, because we just started.
You started.
Yeah, but I thought it was starting earlier, so...
You look very
smart. No, you just started, I'm feeling a bit more okay.
Well, you're very welcome. I hope you're welcome.
Thank
you're
you.
Sitting in the power position right there, you see. That closes the gap. That closes the gap of the art. I have been a philosopher for interested in philosophy, I would say seriously, for about 76 years. That's, when I was 6 years old, I taught my mother, bless her soul, in Germany, that I wanted to be a philosopher. And I remember very clearly experiencing what Paul Tillich, eons later, called the mystery and the miracle of being. The fact that there's a word of which I'm aware, it occurred to me that this doesn't make any sense at all, and that stayed with me ever since. And I guess that's really the beginning of philosophy. I want to... the decision was made this morning, this noon, that the best way to get going here systematically, with energy, with passion, is to say something about what I call philosophy in business and the leadership diamond, which is just as a systematic way of being a philosopher in the business world. And I'm very serious about that. What do they have there? What did
They've
you find?
What Salou had prepared,
and
also the questions.
Questions, okay.
And then the three articles.
Okay. All right. This is for you to have. It's as you know, it's this proprietary stuff that I use for being in business. Patty and I have been in this business for over a generation, traveled over 40 countries, virtually the entire world, except for the Middle East and East Europe, but in South Africa, and a time, a long time, in Port Elizabeth, South Africa, another one in Stavanger, Norway. This is water. Is this water here?
Yes, this is water for you.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that helps. Whoops. And I would say that it works. That what I do or what we do, and I think there's nothing like quite like it anywhere, quite like it anywhere, but there should be a lot more of it, is to be a pretty good philosopher. I've got good credentials to be a good philosopher, lots of experience, and I've been involved in psychotherapy, in psychiatry, been involved in theology, and also in engineering. My work has been in my doctoral dissertation is in philosophy and mathematics. My undergraduate work at Stanford was in theoretical physics. All my degrees in philosophy, and I studied music extensively. So, I was born in Germany. I spent a lot of my life in Latin America, German being my first language, Spanish my second, and English my third, and French my third. I'm getting there. I can understand when you say hello. One of my dreams is to study, really know French well, really well, which you can because you're born here. The job of a philosophy professor in an academic setting, I've been a professor for 34 years, and I learned something at that time, lots of students, and I've been in business for an equal amount of time. You learn that the job of a philosopher, is a teacher, is really to understand in depth what philosophy is, has been, why it's so important in the history of mankind, summarize it, condense it, digest it, and make it available to the students, and it becomes a very, very key ingredient in understanding leadership. And one of the things that I talk about is that right now, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Right now, I am very much committed to the general education program at Harvard University, which was a program that I taught for most of my career because it was a standard in American education and probably the standard in many other places as well. That has now been renewed for the first time in 40 years. That university has put together with tremendous effort a program that is mandated for those students, those undergraduates, who will get a degree from Harvard, and are expected to demonstrate leadership in the world. And when maybe it's difficult to apply to Harvard, and about 1 out of 20 get in. So it is a very select group of students, has more money than any other university in the world practically, and it's the oldest university in the United States, about 370 years old, very, very old. It so happens that the characteristics of the leadership, the Harvard General Education Program, which has to be incorporated in all courses by all professors, is very close to what this diamond is all about. And that is what the university says, is that is how we want people to think and be when they come into the world from Harvard, saying that they are ready to be leaders in the world. And today, 40%, this comes directly from the president, a woman, for the first time in its history, 40% of the currently enrolled students at the university do not speak English at home, which means this is a global university, and these people fan out and they make a difference. Not because of what the university does, but what they do to the university. They're picked very exceptionally. And the process of picking students is very complicated. And the people guarantee, they say, that you will never be excluded from that university because of money. The money is only going to be there for you if you're capable to be independent enough, free enough to take advantage of what that university offers. So this is a way of giving some credibility and some academic background to what we're doing here, so that it isn't some kind of a new age thing, something that just happened. It's a history behind that. And Patty and I just finished a tour with a board of directors, which lasted a week, started in down in southern Italy, in the Pestum, which was a Roman colony, I mean a Greek colony in Italy, and we used as our basis the Iliad, the Odyssey, the Aeneid, and Dante's Divine Comedy, and we talked about the culture of Greece, the culture of Rome, and the Christian culture, all of that. And then, you know, we went on a Danube tour a few years back to get the feeling for the Habsburg dynasties in Europe. So this is a way to let you know that what this is all about has some traction. And it is very European in some ways, although it tries to be general. So the diamond is an attempt, and we can justify it, to take all of this philosophical stuff and put it together in a format that the change agent in the world today, which is business, not the military, and not the church, business, that is changing the world, can use to put some character, not just technology, but some character in what they do anyway. I copy from you, and I pass it back to you. This is sort of the position of what the diamond is trying to do. It's a way of bringing philosophy into business. It's a business proposition. And as I make a few comments to give you an outline which you have there, and I'm going to do that painting pictures in your mind, that what I would like you to contribute to our work here right now is to think how you can make use of it. Think of all of those things and how you can make use of them in the things that matter most to you. And that's your responsibility. Your responsibility is to take advantage of all of this, which is tested, and has been around for a long time, you can hear it in my voice, and to really take some personal responsibility, how do you, and then let's have a conversation on how you can make use of that in a way that's going to make a difference. And it's not new, but maybe the formulation is new. And here are the, and it's all in your writing there, so look with those together, and actually this piece is in view of a table. When this collapses here, then you take a break. And I don't even, maybe you, Salou, could maybe just raise your hand and say, look at page so and so, as you put that together. I want to say something about the ontograph.
This is this page.
Well, it's a number to that page.
There is no number, but...
the only one without a number. It means the map of being. The 12 points we use, we say, these are the 12 important points that the world philosophers have brought out, and we want to talk about. And what I want to call to your attention, their own number from 1 to 12, that's a map of being, an easy way to teach philosophy. And there are 12 items to consider. We'll consider 10. Number 1, number 2, and number 3 to 10. Three zones in there I want you to pay attention to. Number 1, number 2, and 3 to 10. Number 1 on that map is you, the ego, who looks at the world. Everything starts, it's called the navel of the world in mythology. Everything starts with you. It's called the egocentric predicament. You're stuck with being yourself. Woody Allen likes to say at the beginning of most of the introductions to his books, I'm great. My only regret is I wish I was someone else, you see. And that's what you cannot do. You cannot be someone else. And Kierkegaard says if you discover that you're living out somebody else's life, you're in despair. You've got to live out your own life. We are stuck with who we are. It's good, bad, it's the way it is. And what we think is a limited lifespan. Now the thing we say about you that is a philosophical import is that you're an individual and that you're free. Meaning by that you are You're not somebody else. You are an I am. You're stuck with yourself. You have an I am experience. And sometimes that's good. Ah, I won. Ah, I won the Olympics. I won the prize. I won $1 million. I won a wonderful relationship. I have won. That's the I am experience. That's good. But if you happen to be a prisoner of war in Afghanistan right now, then why me is not exactly what you want to be. You're stuck. You cannot be somebody else. So then it's a terrifying experience. So if you have your legs blown off in a bomb in a homemade device, you know, come home to see your baby and your wife for the first time. This is Dad. This was Dad. He's happy to see you, but he's crippled. Who knows what's going to happen? So to be yourself can be wonderful, but also tragic, or both. But you're stuck with that. It's the I that you are. It's the individual. Very important in our culture, very important in Western culture, very important in philosophy, that the individual is very important. The French Revolution made that statement. The various constitutions of nations and the rights of man make that statement. You're protected by your government for your rights as a citizen in good countries, as it were. And you have responsibility as a citizen, etc., etc. And the second one is that you have free will. And I don't want to get into the controversy of whether there is free will or not. I want to say flat out that at the heart of yourself is a free person. You are condemned, said Sartre, to be free. You must make choices, like it or not. And one of the things that you may want to prepare yourself for, and you may want to prepare other people for, there may be a diagram about free will in there, is that you need to be prepared to make choices and decisions that you had hoped you would never be required to make. I like to ask people, what act of courage is going to be demanded of you by life in the next 6 months? What act of courage? What decision is going to be thrown in your lap that you said, I wish I didn't have to make that decision? Okay. I wish I didn't have to make that, but you have to. Because whatever you do, it will be a choice. Now, you're free, you are a chooser, you make decisions. Some are easy, some are difficult. Ultimately, we want to make a very strong point that you're responsible for the human being who you are. You come with equipment, physical, mental, psychological, ethnic, yes. But you are capable of making decisions and choices of what you're going to do with that. But there's a big theme in the history of philosophy, especially today, and it's a big theme in that regard. So first of all, an individual who's free. And that's sometimes a big burden. It makes you anxious and guilty, gives you power that you may not want to exercise. Starts with you, always, every day. When you drive, as Alu did for us, in this traffic, you got to make choices all the time. Turn left, but first turn right, but go 100 meters backwards, and then turn the car over 3 times. You know? That's what the lady says on the
GPS.
What does that mean? The navigator.
Yeah.
And then, you know what she said? You did it all wrong, you know. And so you got to really be on your toes. And then you got to get her to say it again. And she said, no comment. You see, car honking you. That takes presence of mind. That's leadership. To stay conscious and to stay serious of the rules. Number two is the opposite. Number two is the world, which is a system. The world is totally interactive, and you're in the middle of it. You're in the middle of it, the world looks at you, and you look at the world. And you negotiate all the time how you're going to get along. Your life is made up of being an individual in a system full of individuals. And the stock market and elections are when the individuals, by choice, create a system. And they don't really know how the other people are going to choose. And so we have this complicated situation in which a system is made out of individual choosers. They don't know what each other is going to choose. And the stock market is a guess on how they're going to choose. And the elections are a hope for some people of how they're going to choose at the ballot box. And the two big intellectual movements of the 20th century were, on the left, existentialism, all about the individual and free will, and on the right, systems thinking, which is the exact opposite. That's all. It's a field, it's a system that is constantly interactive with molecules banging against each other and attracting each other and so on. That's a picture of the world. The individual, the soul, the mind, I mean the consciousness, the awareness, and on the other side, the world in which you're living, that gives you all the things you need. And in the middle, as a lens, as an interface, bridge between you and the world, is the mind. The mind we study in philosophy from the inside. You are one, you have one, what's that like? Study the mind. And the diamond is a way of telling you how you study the mind. And there you have four outer diamond points or categories or ways of being smart and four inner ones. And I want to tell you about the outer ones right away and how that works. Are there any pages that you think we should look at?
No.
This one.
What is that number?
It's just two pages right after the ontograph.
That is the interface, the lens. And what you really need to do is to think of yourself as here is your mind. And this is you. Look at the world through the vehicle that is the mind. And the world looks at you through the vehicle that is the mind. And if you take the mind out, then what shows? Well, we don't know. You can't do it. You know, you get always stuck with the mind. So some of these great thinkers have come up with some very clever ways of trying to figure out what that mind does as an interface. And that's what you use. And if you want to have something practical, it is these categories of the mind that you use to make an impact. Now, I want to see if what I said made any sense to anyone. Whether you knew that I was saying this in English. What did I just say? Or what did you hear in there? I want to hear just a little reaction from you. As if it, what did you hear in those few words? That's moving fast to make up for those times. What did you hear? And what do you want to say as a result of what you heard? Never mind what I said, but what did you hear? Yes, please. Thank you. Thank you for being first. That cuts the ice. That gets us going. Wonderful. Please.
You said, I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, all right. That's a trick. You answer a question by asking another question. But that's what I do. I said, what did you hear me say since I started talking right now? As a way not to ask, what did I say? You know, big things. But what did you hear? What came across? Where are you in all of that? That's paying attention to you. Okay? So, you want to tell us what you heard?
What I feel is that there is always an interface between me as the individual and the world. And that I perceive the world through that mind, through that interface, and the other way around.
Okay. And what's the difference between you and the world?
Until hearing you, I felt integrated into that world. Now I feel also like observing, more an observer of that world.
Okay. You observe, all of us here are part of your world, and world's big, and you want things from that world, and you may fear things from that world, and you always relate to that world, and the world relates to you. And that's true of every one of us individually, although the individual is very special, because you are not replaceable. You can't, maybe if you're a soldier, theoretically, you think you are, but you cannot be replaced. As a mother or a wife or a daughter, you cannot be replaced. That's a citizen. You are unique in you, And the world is a system of interaction, a field, a force, and we don't understand it, and the delineations aren't clear. And very good. Anybody else want to say it? Thank you for starting. What did you hear? You want to say something?
Yeah.
Okay.
I understood that, like, the world, the system, is very deterministic, while us, we have the free will, so it's not completely deterministic, and maybe we really have free will.
So that's
a big difference.
Yeah. That's a very good point. That's extremely good. You said in what I would say represents a pretty widespread philosophical position. The ego contains free will in it. Very important. But I didn't say anything about the system, except it interacts. Systems thinking tells us that causation is different from what it used to be. When you had Newton and Leibniz and all the mathematicians and Plato, you know, they had some very deterministic views of how the system works, but they've been abandoned. You know, with the indeterminacy principle of Heisenberg and things like that, it's been abandoned. And now we don't quite know how systems interact, but we can somehow make some generalizations. The system will always try to find a balance. The system is going to be resistant to change. The system has its own logic. And you think you are acting on your own wisdom, but no, the system is making you do things, you know. And you are in this economic class, and that's what the system then makes you do. And in a group like that, you will form little cliques, you know, automatically, in a larger setting, in a company, little cliques, and hate the other clique, and so on. And all of those things will occur. And the laws of causation are very unclear in system thinking. That's a big advantage. Very good. I mean, this is, we're connecting. And connecting is important. Let's have a third person. So, no, there are two. Why don't both of you say so? You were first, you're getting more.
I think you're trying to build a map, as you said that you're going to help us, will give us some tools, and it will be our responsibility to find things to change with those tools, or act with those tools. So I see that you're starting to draw that map, but I'm not sure yet exactly what I can do with it. So I see two points, you know, the self and the system, I see them. But for now it's still, you know, beginning of a map, and I'm not sure exactly what I can do with it.
Exactly. Well, the first thing, a map helps you get oriented. The experience of being an adolescent is to be disoriented, trying to figure out things. A child trying to figure things out. And that map is a way to give you some answers. What do you do when you're a leader? You know, what are you supposed to think about? Or when you have a difficult situation to deal with, how are you going to approach it? Should you cry? Should you lie? Should you give up? Should you get mad? Should you kill someone? Should you die? I mean, or should you think? What should you do when you're in a difficult situation? The usual response of high executives to studying the diamond is, it gives me control over my leadership thinking, my leadership doing, my leadership behavior, my leadership feelings. It gives me some control over it. And that's very reassuring. I've got big responsibilities. I'm like, what do I do now? That's very good. So I want to thank you. And you're the next person.
Yes. I'm quite interested in your ontograph and the difference between the individual and what I would call the citizen. How can you understand other cultures and the meaning of the others? I made a lot of work about Habermas, about epistemology. How can you understand...
Who did you mention?
Jürgen Habermas. It's a... German philosopher of communication.
Okay.
And
current?
Yes. No, he just died a few years ago, but he had a major achievement about the possibility of the human beings to communicate between each other.
Okay.
And
ways that are more other than the normal ways.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he tried to understand how we have a balance in our inner personality,
yes,
between our individual statements and how we can go to the others to understand the point of view of the other. That's communication, in fact.
It's very important.
Very important, especially in politics also, to understand the point of view of other cultures, other civilizations, and so. And I think this maybe is one of the big points where we have problems today, because it's very good that we are individuals, but sometimes we are too individualistic. And so finding a good balance between what he said, a figure of Narcissus, turn to your own, and to Socius, the one who is turned to the others in citizenship, is understanding a good balance in social and in society, in social relation in society.
You make some very good points there. And you see, the philosophy in business there, the undergraph, is a way of saying that you're in a state of continuous communication with the world. The world is made up of people and of things, and you're in constant communication. But you're still unique, you're still not somebody else. And in many ways, communication may be the most important thing that you can do. Now, I'll get to the diamond immediately, because the theme that deals with that kind of communication among people is ethics. The ethics corner, the ethics dimension, is really that part of you that connects or disconnects with people. You see, so the and let me get started, and you will see that I get to your point then very quickly about communication. Apologies, and I would like you to write down the name of that philosopher. When we talk about the diamond, we talk first about the four outer points, and in the following order. And there's a second diagram there, the one that gives you the bifurcation of the other diamond. You get that there?
The
bifurcation, look at that. Where you have, under ethics, you have empathy.
Application.
That would be useful at this particular point. Okay, that's a very important diagram. Unfortunately, maybe you just pass it around and let people see it.
Okay.
It's too bad the pages didn't get in there. No. But that's very important for this particular point. Coming from your comments.
Yeah.
Can
you
already
see?
I can use this water here.
Yes, it's for you.
There's some colder water there.
No, it's the same. It's the same.
Sparkling water there.
Yes, you want some?
Okay, I want to, you see, you're involved in this right now, even by just fingering through papers, and that's much better than just pontificating here. Remember that that's your mind, and that you as a chooser is outside, and the world as a goal of you is also outside. That's it. That is your bridge, the diamond. The first step to understand is that part of you which we call courage. Now, it's very important to understand that courage is a major philosophic theme throughout history, and we've tried to condense an understanding of courage in a very systematic way. Courage is to make two choices. And may I see the diagram? Courage is to make two choices. It is to, number one, be willing to risk. To risk means that you don't know whether you're going to win or not. And Goldman Sachs sells risk in investing. How much risk are you willing to take? We have a product that will give you this much risk and that much of a return possible. It's also to be a self-starter, so that you don't ask, what am I supposed to do? But rather, what do I choose to do to take some initiative around here? And when you have employees, You want them to be self-starters. They don't want to come, you don't want them to come in the morning and say, what am I supposed to do today? But I have some thoughts as to how I might really help you run this company, and here's what I propose, what do you think? I studied this as a self-starter, take initiative. And also, I'm willing to take risks, and not too many, but the capacity to take risks is a big issue, in business. And you can overdo it, and you can underdo it. Now, those are choices that you make. I am going to be a person who takes a good look at the courage dimension and how to make that come to life. How much courage does this situation warrant? What would be too much courage? What would be inadequate courage in this situation? For you, for me? And it's a very powerful way, and we call that a leadership a space for leadership, to create space for leadership, that we will sit together and we will discuss what act of courage this group needs to undertake, and in any regard, how we communicate, how we work, how we include people, how we exclude people, whatever it is that has something to do with difficult decisions that involve anxiety and guilt, but also power. So you make a choice about how courageous you want to be. In Plutarch's Lives, and Plutarch, who wrote about 15 books on the 15 noble Greeks, and another big book over thousands of pages long, on the noble Romans. An incredible work, isn't it, compared to them. And then Alexander the Great, you know, he writes a story which they brought a horse that couldn't be tamed. And they were going to just send it away. That's we can't deal with that horse. But Alexander, as a young man, said, let me try that horse. He was a young man when he died. Let me try that horse. He was really nice to the horse, talked to the horse, caressed the horse. And Plutarch writes about all that. And mounted it and began to ride it. And they were amazed how he managed to connect with that horse. And his father, the king of Philip of Macedonia, then said to Aristotle, Alexander, who then was called Alexander the Great, you are worthy of inheriting the throne of Macedonia. But after I've seen you do this and everybody applauds you, you know, tame that very, very ferocious horse, you should have bigger and greater goals than just to run Macedonia, you know, run the world, as it were. And then he did. And then King Philip said, we want a good teacher for you. And the best teacher in Greece is Aristotle. So we make him your teacher. It goes on. See, that's just written, you know, not long after those things occurred. And it's very interesting to read the life of Julius Caesar, of Solon, of all these names that you hear about Greece and Rome in the Plutarch. And so did Shakespeare. He read about Julius Caesar there, and then he wrote his play, Julius Caesar, based in great part on what Plutarch had to say about Julius Caesar and so on. And the big theme among those people is courage. And so you learn from them, the old people learn from them what courage really is. And you're going to have to ask yourself, these are the questions you have to ask yourself. And you have some questions on that question sheet. You all have that question sheet?
Yes.
Maybe read to me some of the courage questions. Who's going to do that? What are some? Just read them to me.
What will success require of you?
What will success require of you? What's another one?
What are you afraid of?
Yeah?
What are you afraid of?
What?
Are you afraid of?
What are you afraid of? Okay. All right. What is happening in this world that keeps you from taking courageous action? And what's your opinion about yourself under those circumstances? Very important questions. No answers. You have to answer them with how you live. One more. What's another question under courage there? Quick. Anyone?
Okay. Yeah. What do you need to do
that you have been avoiding until now?
Okay. What do you need to do that you have been avoiding? And I say, what acts of courage does the world act of you? Now you see, the question to ask you maybe, or to, for you to ask yourself, is what am I missing in life by not taking courageous action? What am I being? And that's really what's known by Freud as a neurosis. That a neurotic person is one who isn't living as much as well as that person can for fear of something. Ultimately, it's the agoraphobia. I'm afraid of open places, so I don't go out. Well, that's going to restrict my life. We would never have made it from our hotel to here, or from wherever we are, from California to Brussels, or from Lille to Brussels, if we weren't willing to take the risk. And it's a big risk to go out. So courage questions are very powerful in giving you an insight of how you're doing in your life, or how a company is doing, how a child is doing, how a nation is doing. And it's not a question of having a formula for what's right. The formula is to raise the issue. Who is sort of, some people just miss out on life because they don't take any risks. Others get killed early because they ride a motorcycle without a helmet. I used to ask students, when they first come in, this bearded guy, philosophy, who wants philosophy? So I said, take your pen, and I want you to write a number on that pen immediately after the question, which is a number I'm going to ask you. I want you to write a number down instinctively when I ask you this question. What do you think is the age at which you will die? That's not one of the several philosophies. And they came up with interesting answers. And I wrote a book about it called It's an Answer to Death. Unfortunately, I haven't read it yet, so I don't know what's in it. But it's, anyway, it's a question. It's an answer to death. One student says, 35. And I said, well, why do you think you wrote 35, you know? I would have been dead, 45 years ago. And I don't think I like that thought. And I beat it anyway. Well, he says, I am a dirt bike driver, and they're very dangerous, you know. You jump over hills and so on, so I love it, I don't wear a helmet. And so probably will die young. You know? I don't know if they want to, but that's, well, maybe that's too much courage, you know. Maybe you still think about that. And the other one wrote 250 years. I said, ooh, pretty good. Where's your formula, you know? And he said, I'm just playing it safe, you know. Just not fooling around. And so, well, anyway, it gets you to thinking about things that you may not often think about. But it is a way of using courage as a tool to have a leadership conversation. You know, courage can be used for branding, which is your specialty. You know, we challenge you. Invest. Just take some courage. But are you not courageous enough? And of course, Kierkegaard's wonderful statement. Wonderful statement. To risk is to lose your footing momentarily. Momentarily. To risk is to lose your footing momentarily. Not to risk is to lose yourself. Now that sort of challenges you to think again about some of the decisions that you want to make in your life. And it can be very sound to get you going. And just, it shows how character issues develop out of that question. Now we get to ethics. The most important decision that you may ever make is your attitude towards communicating with other people. You know? Now how are you going to do that? Now some people can let you know right away that I don't communicate with you. There were two people when we got to the hotel last night. One was very warm and open, communicates. The other was looking at the computer and let you know, don't bother me, I'm doing important thing here on the computer and I'm not interested in customers. You know? He gave that very clear, you knew that if you were to address him, he'd bite off your hand. You know? And so you get that message. And you get the message that some people tell you, tell me more about yourself, which is one way of communicating, and another, I'm going to tell you what's wrong with you. You know, the other way of communicating. and just to get into the whole area of what's going on in you when you communicate with people, and to have a dialogue about how you are in your communication with people. Maybe the most important thing you ever do. But take some courage to communicate with people. People are shy, they're embarrassed, you know. It takes courage to communicate, to courage to confront somebody. I think that's wrong. Well, maybe you won't like me anymore when I tell you that. And other people are just in your face all the time. You know, you want to fight, you have a problem with this, you know. They're looking for a problem. So you talk about ethical courage. Courage for ethics. And ethics in relating to people has two entirely different dimensions. What are they? On the sheet there. What are those two dimensions of ethics? Yes?
Principle. Principle and compassion.
Now, principle is hard. Okay? It means integrity, it means justice. You're going to be judged. And that's hard. That's ethics. You're obligated to do that. You're not performing your obligation. You make an exception of yourself. That's bad. The next one is what?
Compassion.
Compassion. It's the opposite. You're forgiven. There's charity. There's very different things. And how do you put them together? They don't fit. But they're both there. So having conversations which tell you it is important for you to make some decisions as to how you use courage or don't use courage to make ethical choices. That's a very, put that into practice, and you may find that there's so many very important overdue conversations that you need to go through. A conversation about whom requires now more of justice, fairness, ethics, obligation, and more compassion than you have. Is it your child? Is it your spouse? Is it your parent? Is it your client? Is it a student? Is it your enemy? Start getting into space for these leadership conversations in the business context. Project management, you know, I was working for a company in Norway that makes underwater pipes, the one that burst in the Gulf of Mexico, and another company that hires them to make those big holes in the ground that are the specialty of the Norwegians, you know, they go way, way down and they go sideways. They go all the way to Saudi Arabia that way, sideways, and suck out their oil, you know. And they wanted to, and it's a new technique. And then there will be some political action, probably in Brussels, you know, about that. And we have the big oil spill, of course, in the Gulf. Now, that the platforms, the helicopters that take people to those platforms, the danger of being in a storm, and those kind of oil bursts, they're repairing them way underwater with the robots, all very complicated, divers, and they die, and all of that. It takes courage to carry out those jobs and to be responsible, and it takes tremendous concern for people to carry that out. 11 died in the Gulf of Mexico in that explosion, and the equipment that's supposed to close the hole in the ground there, you know, the well failed, and another one also failed, and that's 5,000 meters under, 5,000 feet. It's over a mile. That's a mile, and 1 2/3 kilometers. That's a long way down, you know, in the water. So ethics and courage. Now once you make decisions about how courageous you're going to be, you make decisions whether you use, when you use courage to be ethical or not, how you're going to make your ethical choices, and then you get to reality. And what are the two dimensions of reality? Who's going to tell me?
Objectivity and facts.
Yes?
Objectivity and facts.
Okay, objectivity.
Facts.
And, well, that's the same. That's number
hardness.
One.
Hardness.
Okay, there are two. Hardness would be the second. That's very different from being ethical or being courageous. That's being objective now. Impersonal. Impersonal. The other one is to be tough and hard. I don't care about feelings. Reality doesn't much care about your feelings. The Air France airplane that left Sao Paulo and just ended up diving into the Atlantic off the coast of Brazil, and was so deep there that they couldn't find anything, and some bodies were floating up there. It's hard in that airplane. You know you can't do a thing. You don't ever want to be in that position. And when there's turbulence, you say, I don't think I like flying. You know? When you have turbulence in the car, it's okay. But if that turbulence going over those stones here on the streets, if that occurred in the airplane, you wouldn't like it. You know, you wouldn't like it. You know, you say, this is, I think I should leave this profession of having crashed me fly around. I'd rather walk or swim. You know, and now and then, a catastrophe does occur. And we think of the horror of being caught in that box there and just descending into water or what have you. Well, that's the hardness of life. And hardness is a very difficult issue to deal with. Life is hard. Business is hard. Money is hard. Being in debt is hard. War is hard. Age is hard. Illness is hard. And there are certain things in life that are reinforced concrete, you know. I'm not going to get anywhere. This isn't going to budge, no matter how much you wish you could do, how much it isn't going to budge. And so hardness, the capacity to deal with the harshness of life. You have a child that's retarded. You don't like it. The back is going to change. There's brain damage. You know. You have a relative you love dies early. You don't like it. So objectivity is that you look at life scientifically. Maybe that'll get you somewhere. That's an attitude. And you have to ask yourself, maybe I'm being too sentimental in certain things. Maybe I'm being too soft, too ethical. And I have to know how to be harder. Maybe I need to be harder with people I deal with. Maybe I'm being too hard with people. I have a client who talked about his very bright children, and he says, my wife thinks I'm too harsh with my children. He's a Brit. He is a very proud Brit, and he acts as if he graduated from Sandhurst Military Academy. And he's very, very tough in that regard, and his wife is very upset about many of the things that he does in that regard. That's a conflict between ethics and reality. Those are conversations to get into, and those are philosophical conversations, and they have huge business impact. They have to do with your character. They have to do with the credibility, how much people trust you. They are how much people will ask you to do difficult jobs. Has a lot to do with your personality. You can make choices about that, and you see how the world responds. Those are the conversations that build character. And the last one of these very different themes is vision. Vision is to imagination, is to do... is to think what could be. You see, animals probably don't have vision. They may be practical. But you can tell very quickly whether somebody is stuck in a routine or says, as Edison said, a rule in his company. And he and Ford, Henry Ford, were good friends, both in Detroit, Michigan, a French city. And Edison would challenge you. There's a better way, find it. Look, please, can you help? There's a better way, find it. That's innovation. There's a better toothbrush, find it. There's a better car, find it. There's a better airplane, find it. That challenge. And using your brain, you're an artist, you're going to create a new symbol, a new interpretation of life, whatever. It's all very important. Now you see now that vision and ethics and reality and courage are very different ways of looking at the world. There are four important ways for you to be or not to be. There are important ways for your companies to be or not to be. And getting into intelligent conversations about how you're doing there, what decisions you need to make about them, how they're organized. That is you creating and building and configuring your own mind. And you know how to do that. But this is a way of challenging you to do that much better. I'm going to stop here. And maybe we should take a break or something like that. It's a foreign language for many people. People get more tired in a foreign language than in their own. But twice as quick. You know. People don't go to sleep for about 40 minutes if English is a natural tongue, but in 20 minutes if it isn't. And in 5 minutes, they don't even speak it. Then it becomes a kind of a sleeping pill. It's very good, very good. I used to tell my students, the main reason for going to a lecture is it produces such wonderful sleep. I have insomnia. The minute the lecture is over, I wake up. Why don't you come, doctor, professor, put me to sleep at night? Well, here's my baby crying. Why don't you give a lecture to the kid? In 5 minutes, it'll be asleep. And when a student used to snore in my classes, I would say to his colleague, friend, wake him up, it's okay to sleep, but snoring, he's sort of bothering the rest, interfering with the rest of the class. And the student would then say, doc, you put him to sleep, you wake him up again. That's for the respect, you know, of the professor. So what we need to do now is to translate those questions, as that one page does for you, into things that you need to discuss to get past stuck in your life. What decisions do you have to make about putting all of those together, balancing them or not balancing them, using them or not using them? What do you need to do in order to get past being stuck? And we have four pages in there, which Salu prepared, that summarize a longer analysis of these four corners. Before you take your break, I want you to see that, because we're going to work with that when it's going to be after your break. Why don't you tell them what those four pages are and find them for them? Can you help me?
Yes.
Okay. But I won't get back. I'm lost for that.
So, you know, you have a... We are talking... These four pages are the leadership capacity. Okay,
that's the outside diamond.
The outer diamond. Okay, so you see,
without pages, you are challenged to find those things.
Okay,
part of the design, I'm sure.
So, do you see this leadership capacity?
You may pass what to go wrong.
So right after the title, leadership capacity. Okay, so these are the feeling, choose, courage, ethic, reality, security, etc. Okay.
If you find them, if you don't ask Sharon to find them for you, this lady is struggling there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Shall we read them now, or during the
break?
Well,
no, I just want to make sure they have them.
Okay.
And I would, when we come back from our break, we're going to work with them, because we want you to start now seriously, read them, sure, but you can read one during the break. But we need to understand what they say. They are all related. They have a similar construction, each one of them. And you need to pick that up, and we'll talk about them. They have a lot of information. Those four pages, on these four capacities. And then that is a way for you to become acquainted with the tool that you're born with, the categories of the understanding, how the world is organized by you, and do a better job now getting into that, and what impact it will have on the issues that matter most to you. We want to get into that conversation, and I think probably Anton can help in that as well, because these two people have had a lot of experience with just this kind of work, and I think they should make use of it in here. Now we have, let's make that break very brief, so that we can just wake up and make up for the lost time.
Yes,
the airplane takes off because it has a missing pilot or something like that. And the pilot just had a heart attack, and we thought it might be better for him to fly us.
There are some sandwiches, so if you are hungry, you can have also a bite.
Okay.
Okay.
You want to give it? You want to set a time so that we can discipline
well,
and go
10
back.
Minutes, is that okay?
Give it an hour, then what the clock will say for
well, it's a 5 to 8 now. Shall we take a break of?
Oh, well, 8:15.
8:15? Okay.
Right. Makes sense. About 20 minutes.
Okay.
I'll take a break too.
Yeah.